seemed to be gorged.
Gorged? On my grain? Kirk, I am going to hold you responsible. There must be thousands of them.
Hundreds of thousands.
1,771,561. That's assuming one tribble, multiplying with an average litter of 10, producing a new generation every 12 hours over a period of 3 days.
And that's assuming that they got here 3 days ago.
And allowing for the amount of grain consumed and the volume of the storage compartment.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton, reporting for duty. And then I was actually just recording that I got Cam to play back to you guys, because I always say Tyler Orton is reporting for duty.
It's very true. And this week's conundrum is... Desert Island Star Trek episodes.
This will be a fun episode, but I think, Cam, there's a little bit of other stuff we need to touch upon before we delve into this fun topic here.
That's right. First up, we want to talk about Star Trek, The Ultimate Voyage, the concert experience that's touring around. Tyler and I just went and saw it a couple nights ago.
Is that, the Center for Performing Arts in Vancouver on Saturday, April 9th, I think?
Yes.
Sure. Sounds good. I did not realize it was going to get as rowdy as it did, Cameron.
Mm-hmm.
They're fisticuffs. They were drunken patrons. This is all at the Star Trek Symphony, and we are not joking, are we?
No, yeah. I mean, yeah, we had two drunk people sitting behind us who... There's that famous Simpsons joke about Lisa saying, who'd come to our concert to boo us? Well, these two people came to basically boo the Star Trek concert experience.
Yes, they would not shut up. Like, they kept talking and talking throughout this. And Cam, they were kind of far enough away from me, but you could hear what they were saying. Like,
they were driving me crazy.
Yeah, share with the listeners, the kind of comments that they would have to say.
Basically, anytime it was anything other than TNG, they would just, ridicule it the entire time. Just be like, who cares about this stupid show? No one likes it. Whatever.
Yeah.
Even when it was an original series, he's like, oh, yeah, that's that shitty show that was kind of like Batman.
And this is during,
wow.
The Amok Time music, which is some of the most iconic Star Trek music ever.
Yeah, they were miserable, but they left at the halfway point, thank God.
Well, that's the thing. During the intermission, everybody in all our row, we were saying, if they come back and they keep talking, oh, we're going to have, some shenanigans. Or I don't know. But I literally turned my head and stared them down three times, and just no reaction from them.
Yeah.
So they kind of, ruined at least the first half. Not ruined the first half for me, but they were very annoying.
Distraction.
Yeah.
But yes, during the Borg music from Best of Both Worlds in the first half, a fist fight broke out on the opposite end of the arena as us.
It was bizarre. We didn't know what was going on. We just heard yelling.
And screaming.
And we turn over and I just saw a guy standing up and I didn't know what was going on. Did you have any idea?
I had absolutely no clue what was going on.
So what happens is we go down to the bathroom during intermission, and then our friend Tom, he's been a guest on the show before. He did the Insurrection podcast with us, as well as, your guide to a Star Trek convention.
And Unification.
Unification, most recently. Yes, I forgot all about him. and then he saw, the victim of this attack washing his face. He's bleeding from the eyeball or something?
Or he's bleeding from the face.
From the face. And apparently, so our good friend slash fallen comrade, Benjamin Yong, he was at the concert as well. You know, there's another former guest of ours at the concert, one Nick Eagland. Guys, it was a who's who of subspace transmission at this concert here.
And people would see them all and be like, who's who?
But, I was talking to Benjamin Yong yesterday, and he revealed, he was actually closer to the fight than we were.
Right.
And so during the intermission, the VPD, they show up, and Ben's there, watching this all go down, and there's a guy icing his hand. And so, the cops said to the guy, having a fun Star Trek concert, I see.
Oh, my
and
God.
And so... Ben kind of wandered away after that, but it was very interesting that, the guy stuck around after punching somebody else in the face, at a Star Trek concert.
I mean, I go to concerts all the time. I go to, heavy metal concerts, primarily. I don't know if I've ever seen a fist fight before at a concert. This was the first one that I can even think of.
I've only seen one, and it was this giant, like, bodybuilder hanging right outside of the mosh pit holding a beer. And this skinny little kid, like, bumps into him and knocks the guy's beer onto him. The guy just punched his lights out, and I was like, I felt so bad for the kid. Like, he didn't deserve it. And, like, anyways, but that was the one and only time I've ever seen it at a concert.
Right. So that's sort of the atmosphere of the Star Trek Ultimate Voyage.
I had no idea.
Let's talk about the concert itself.
Okay, and that's another thing, because I don't... Okay, you and I, we touched upon, you know, oh, this musical cue happened. It was backdropped by this clip, because there's also a visual element to it, unlike the other performances I've seen at, say, the Star Trek convention in Las Vegas, where they have the Nevada Pops Orchestra come on and perform. That's 100%, you know, music, symphonies playing. This had the visual elements. Cam, what did you think about the visual element?
Well, I really liked that the stage was set up like the bridge. That was very cool and had different mood lighting. And they had the big video screens. And I thought, actually, it was quite well cut together montages for each of the musical cues.
Okay.
Now, there was some...
You're thinking about Fortunate Son, are you?
There were some very curious choices, I thought.
There's a cost of living clip.
I was thrilled. When that happened, I wasn't sitting next to you, but I was so excited. I was like, oh, man, they're doing cost of living. I thought it was very curious, some of the musical cues they chose.
Yeah.
I mean, I never really expected Archer's speech from Fortunate Son to Mayweather to be played out in front of me with live score.
Well, watching Mayweather ball his eyes out for 7 minutes straight... I was like, okay, that kind of took me out of the excitement of being at the live symphony.
Or the jellyfish sequence from Encounter at Farpoint.
I was like, really? This is the next gen clip you're going with?
Yeah, so there were some odd choices. I thought that the DS9 sections they chose were also baffling, but more baffling in that I was pleasantly surprised they had them, but they weren't necessarily ones I expected.
I would have thought maybe something from, like, The Visitor would have been, like, a natural choice. Instead, we had, like, battle sequences from, like, the final arc of Deep Space Nine. So it's a lot of, you know, shoot 'em up sort of stuff going on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good music, you know. I did like the Borg music, you know, that played. That was from First Contact. I don't know, what were some of your highlights? Like, what did you like?
My three favorites were the Amok Time, which played out basically as live score to the actual scene.
It was great.
The Kirk Spock fight. That, to me, I think was the highlight of the night. But I also loved the climax of the Doomsday Machine.
Yeah.
I mean, that is like, to me, that episode is just like a dream. So to see that played out, which I never thought I would see in my life.
But you had brought up, you know, when we had discussed that episode a few weeks back, that it kind of makes you think of the Jaws theme as well. So I'm sure it was amazing for you to
that
hear
was
that.
An absolute dream come true. I also really loved the compilation they did of the Klingons.
Yeah, it was. I like the Klingon music.
It's, me too.
I dig it, and there's some good clips there. And strangely enough, I did dig the Starfleet Academy montage where Wesley's like, "It's my first duty."
Yeah, you know?
But
was that over the Voyager theme?
I think so.
That was strange. That was another curious thing. Like, it was great to hear all the themes played live, but they played the DS9 and the Voyager theme, but without using barely any footage of those series.
It was very strange, I agree. Yeah. Unless you count Nick Locarno.
and I do.
You know, played one by one Robbie Duncan Menil. Here's my thing here. I actually found the visual element a little bit distracting because the dialogue was going on. I like the Nevada Pops thing because I was able to just concentrate on the music.
Right.
And sometimes I found myself, you know, my attention drifting towards the screen as opposed to just absorbing the music myself. I don't know, did you have that issue at all?
I didn't really have it at all, no. Okay. I mean, for me...
What about the dialogue, though?
The dialogue, I think, because they didn't take the dialogue out of the clips, we should say. Like, they kept all of the dialogue in, but the dialogue cranked up. It's like they didn't have correct sound for it, so the voices were actually muffled.
Yeah.
So they had text on the screen. I'm not really sure about that decision.
Well, I'll tell you what. Benjamin Yang, he was sitting in front row. He could not see any of the text on the screen.
Oh.
All he heard was muffled dialogue.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of an unfortunate, you know, byproduct of this decision as well.
I mean, it didn't bother me. To me, that was not at all, didn't hurt the experience at all to me. I just thought it was curious to do. I think you could have gotten away with just the images.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I go to a lot of Vancouver Symphony shows where they do movie tributes. Like, I went to Tim Burton night. I did a Pixar night. They don't usually keep the sound from the clips. It's just video with the music played. And I think that's maybe better when you want to just focus on the music.
Yeah. But well, that's why you were really big on the Showgirls night.
Exactly.
Yeah, last month.
That's at my house. But no, with like
cardboard wharf.
The saddest lap dance of all. But I thought ultimately, like, to me, the difference between the Nevada Pops thing and this was that sort of all. That's the music. This was like kind of a multimedia experience.
Sure.
And for that, I mean, I loved it. To me, it was worth every dollar paid. And I actually bought the CD, the double CD of all the tracks played. Like, I really liked it a lot.
Tell listeners, how much did that cost you?
I think it was $30 for the CD.
There you go. The other thing we should bring up is that Star Trek composer Ron Jones, he dropped in and he actually composed a piece.
Sounds like he drops in on every show.
Oh, is that what it is?
I think so. That song is on the CD, too.
Okay. I thought we were getting a special treat.
I'm not sure about that. We need to hear some from people who've also gone, because I don't know.
I do wonder about the economics of busing 30 people all over North America.
Yeah.
Like, how much are they paying these people? Like, if...
They're the Czech orchestra.
Oh, okay.
So cheap.
Probably.
Probably.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I was wondering, because we walked by some of the orchestra members, like, after we left, and they're all outside smoking.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's not exactly the symphony I picture, but I guess if they're Eastern European, then
quite possible, yeah.
I guess Czech's like Central European, but whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Ron Jones dropped in. I don't know, Ron Jones versus Dennis McCarthy live.
I'll take Dennis McCarthy. I mean, he's the more exciting one.
Yeah. Okay, what did you prefer, Nevada Pops or Star Trek The Ultimate Voyage?
I liked Star Trek The Ultimate Voyage more.
I'm giving it to Nevada Pops myself. Just okay. I thought that was more of a musical experience. Even the sounds, like this...
They didn't do deep cuts, though, with the Nevada one. It was more just kind of all your... I mean, remember they played the TNG theme, like, four times?
That was the first year, yeah. And I was so annoyed because all I wanted to hear is Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, yeah.
And we heard Next Gen four times.
Yeah.
I was like, really?
Yeah.
Anyway, but overall, I mean, Cam, this is a great experience. I don't think either one of us are complaining.
No.
We were not on the receiving end of a fist fight, so it worked out for me.
Yeah, very true. What was your favorite of the night?
You know what? I'm usually a sucker for Deep Space Nine, but for me, it was really the First Contact Borg stuff that sucked me in. I just thought, like, I'd forgotten how great that music was from Jerry Goldsmith. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I'd forgotten about is that I know we crap on Star Trek Generations a lot. Dennis McCarthy is a great composer, and his score for Generations is fantastic. It really blends the next-gen score with kind of that TOS film era really well. I really like the Generations score, and I was very happy that they were able to include that. Did you notice they also had the Insurrection score, like
yes,
the opening scene with them playing in the hay bales?
Yes, I did.
I was like, and that was at like, the top of the hour. I was just like, okay.
I was actually a huge fan of that. They went to selections that weren't ultra general audience friendly. Like, I mean, that, come on, that Enterprise score stuff they chose, I mean, that was not expected. Like, I really, going in, I thought it would be more like the Nevada Pops, where it's all the themes that you know, and, you know, just basically every movie theme.
Well, I was talking to Benjamin about this, and he and I were both disappointed that there's no Faith of the Heart. Were you expecting that?
Actually, Tom and I discussed that in the SkyTrain home.
Okay.
That I was completely baffled as to why they wouldn't do an orchestral version of Faith of the Heart.
Well, I thought that's what Ron Jones was going to do.
Mm.
He's going to come out and sing. Oh, well. But yeah, that was my only kind of big surprise.
Why do you think they didn't do that?
It is a very polarizing theme.
They played the Insurrection music.
I know. But I don't think it's as polarizing as Faith of the Heart.
They didn't play Nemesis either, so.
Okay. I like the Nemesis.
I do too.
Okay, well. Well, okay, so moving on, there's maybe a little bit of housekeeping you need to do from last week's episode, which is, you know, of course, the Bad Boys of Star Trek, so far one of our most popular episodes, Cam. So we actually went through the list and we just talked about, you know, kind of the biggest bad boys from each series. We didn't actually decide who the biggest bad boy in all of Star Trek was, Cam, and I think that's something we should, you know, just tell listeners our picks, and I'm going to go through our top pick from every single series.
Okay.
So from the original series, we eventually decided that it was Khan.
Yeah.
From Next Generation, we actually decided it was Worf. From Deep Space Nine, Quark. From Voyager, Tom Paris. From Enterprise, Shran. And from the rebooted J.J. Abrams series, Kirk, the new Kirk, played right. by Chris Pine. Out of those selections, those six guys right there, those six bad boys, I should say, who is the most like Dylan from 90210, Cam?
I think I have to give it to Khan.
Okay.
I think Khan is just the total package.
Okay.
He's genetic perfection. You know, he's got away with the women. He has that sort of rakish quality.
You're talking Space Seed Khan, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
because that's a very important distinction. Yes. Because I can totally see an argument for that. Because Bad Boy isn't, like, just a villain. Mm-hmm. You know, he could be antagonistic, but, you know, go listen to our episode, and we actually clearly define what a bad boy is.
Right.
Here's the thing. And Cam, you may just roll your eyes in disgust, but my vote for biggest bad boy maybe goes to Tom Paris. He's such, like, weak sauce. But when I think Star Trek's attempt to do a bad boy, Paris kind of fits the bill in, like, the lamest way possible. I agree.
You're dragging this topic back into this episode for that?
I don't know. Actually, you know, now you have me rethinking. No, I can't say Tom Paris with a straight face. Actually, no, I think what it was more so than anything else is Into Darkness version of Kirk.
Okay.
Just because he becomes more of the horn dog, but he is kind of the guy who doesn't follow rules, but then it comes and bites him in the ass eventually.
Right.
So I think, you know, Chris Pine's Kirk in Into Darkness especially is kind of the biggest bad boy of them all when it comes to Star Trek.
Okay.
So
there you have it.
You know, Cam, let's just tackle our topic this week.
Yes.
Desert Island Star Trek. What are we talking about?
Basically, this is based on the premise that if you were stranded on a desert island and you only had one episode of each Star Trek series to watch, what would it be? So we're going to kind of go through chronologically through each series and just name what our picks are and maybe some runners-up if you had any on your list, like the ones maybe that you really fought with yourself over.
Yeah. Well, I fought with myself over a lot of
this sort of stuff. So, and yeah, do we want to start just kind of, because we were going to give sort of an example of a desert island idea.
Yeah, you know what, let's say, Cam, I was forced to pick only five albums that I had to bring with me to a desert island, and that's what I'd get for all eternity, or right. until I was rescued, hopefully.
Right.
So if it's albums, quickly I'll go through it. I'd go number one, Tom Waits, Rain Dogs. Two, Queens of the Stone Age, Rated R. Go with Beatles, Abbey Road. TV on the Radio, Nine Types of Light. And I'd go, finally, number five pick would be David Bowie's Young American. So really what I'm trying to do there is have like a wide variety of...
I was thinking you'd mention Aquarium.
What? Like, I'm a Barbie girl?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That was one of the ones I wrestled with for a long time. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to go with dynamic picks, like not all the same genre, just something that would give me a lot of variety here. So that's why I went with modern as well as classic kind of albums, you know, for many a decade. But Cam, I don't know, what's your desert island pick if I threw top five movies you had to bring with you?
Yeah, so I would have to say Jaws and Star Wars, the first Star Wars, are automatically in. I could watch those movies over and over and over and never get bored. The other three I have to go with, I think, The Dark Knight, because I'm such a comic book fan. I got to take one comic book movie with me. That's going to be the one I'm going to watch. That it was that or Spider-Man 2, but I went with Dark Knight. Then I would follow up. You got to have Hitchcock, so I'm taking Rear Window.
Good choice.
That's a movie I love to analyze. And then lastly, I would take The Searchers, John Ford's The Searchers.
Going dark?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I'm very moody on this island, apparently. But ultimately, that's the stuff I really like a lot.
Okay.
I wouldn't.
You're not listening to like Jimmy Buffett albums and like sipping pina coladas or anything. You're being a bad boy. You're being the Dylan from 90210.
That's right.
Okay. Well, let's just jump into it. Like, let's start off with, say, Enterprise. Like, we can only pick one episode from each series. So, Cam, if you can only pick one Enterprise episode, what are you bringing with you to the desert island?
Okay, well, the two that I basically were runners-up that I really... I mean, there was I had three. And the two runners-up for me were Carbon Creek from Season 2.
Okay.
Which is the episode where T'Pol talks about her grandmother coming to Earth.
I debated about that one for a while, and I'll tell you why I didn't ultimately go with it, but go ahead.
And then the other one was Zero Hour, which is the ending of the Zindi arc. ultimately, I felt like removed from the Zindi arc. I don't know if it's one I would want to watch over and over again.
Again and again, yeah.
But I ended up going with Twilight.
Okay, yeah, I like that one. Archer's memory is not all it used to be.
Eh? Right, he's struck by an anomaly, and it's sort of this alternate future, what could happen, where Earth is destroyed by the Zindi, he winds up on this sort of colony on SETI Alpha 5 with T'Pol, and it's just a really interesting look at what their relationship could evolve into, in her words.
Yeah.
And it's really touching, and I think I tried with all of my picks to pick episodes that represented the crew the best, because I think if I only have one episode, I don't want sort of a novelty or just sort of an offshoot episode. Like, that's kind of what kept Carbon Creek go to number one for me.
Yeah, and when I was debating how I was going to choose which episodes, I kind of wanted to pick episodes where, you know, the show was at its best.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is like really, because here's the thing. I really dug Carbon Creek.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, it's a good, solid episode, but do I want to watch that again and again and again and just focus mostly on Jolene Blaylock's performance? Mm-hmm. It's not actually T'Pol who we're watching, you know? So, I mean, that's why I didn't ultimately go with an episode like Carbon Creek.
I wanted it to feel like an episode of the show.
Yeah.
About the crew, but an extraordinary one.
Yeah.
Something that really felt like it kind of captured the very essence of what the show was. And so these, like, the ones I'm going to name in this episode aren't necessarily my favorite episodes of all time. But
yeah.
The ones, if I only have one, I think represent the show.
Because I think that's a very distinction that we should make clear to listeners. Like, we're not picking necessarily our number one Star Trek episode of all time.
Yeah.
We want stuff with the most replay value. Like, the stuff that really is representative of the show, the stuff that we really, that makes us smile, makes us really care about these series.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I debated Carbon Creek. I also debated E-Squared. Also from the Zindi arc. That was kind of an alternate timeline sort of depiction. We find out that Reed never had a wife. And here's the thing. You also get like little character moments, like insights. That's another reason why I debated this one.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. When it comes to just replay value, like, the episode that I could watch again and again and again, I had to go with In a Mirror Darkly, Parts 1 and 2. That's a two-parter.
I didn't pick two-parters. I felt that was cheating.
I was thinking about it, like, is it cheating or is it not? And ultimately, this is the only two-parter I went with, so I was like, screw it. And if you really were going to, you know,
what if you only had to take one part
of it? I'd go with Part 2.
Okay.
And that's, of course, where Captain Archer takes over the USS Defiant. Mm-hmm. Not the one from Deep Space Nine, but the one from the original series. He's wearing, like, the uniform from the original series. Cam, those look gorgeous in high definition, do they not?
Oh, yeah. And you've got a Gorn fight.
Oh.
You've got the Hoshi T'Pol fight. It's just, you've got the Tholian. Like, it's just such a fun episode.
You have Hoshi and T'Pol sluts shaming each other.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. But honestly.
Oh, 2005.
Yeah. When an quaint era.
Yeah.
But I don't know, that episode is just so much fun. Like, and here's the thing, I know what you're saying, because I totally agree with you. With my rest of the picks, I'm not going so much with these one-off kind of episodes where they're kind of anomalies.
Mm-hmm.
This was an anomaly episode, absolutely. But I'm just thinking about what episode could I watch again and again?
Yeah.
Nothing, I had no more fun watching an episode of Enterprise than I did with In a Mirror Darkly.
Right.
So that's why that was an easy pick for me. I also kind of debated maybe something from the Augment arc, maybe just the Augments as well. But ultimately, I'm picking this, the In a Mirror Darkly Part 2, if you put a gun to my head.
Yeah, I mean, for me with Twilight, it was the emotional impact of it.
Yeah.
And I feel like when I go over kind of my picks for this whole episode, it's the only purely emotional episode, the one that really hits that kind of beat. So, you know, if we're going to have variety throughout my Desert Island picks, you know, this is the emotional one. This is when I'm feeling sad.
Oh, okay, that's interesting, because I was going to wonder if, you know, you could watch that one again and again and again, just because it is a little heavy.
It is.
You know.
But as we've seen from my movie picks, I'm a heavy guy.
You're a Dylan.
Yeah, I'm a Dylan.
I'm more of a Brandon. anyways, so let's move on to TOS. Cam, I want to hear from you first, because this is one, like, you have far more TOS knowledge than I have. I've probably watched about half the episodes, and probably almost all the good ones, so there's not as many crappy episodes that I had to go through when it came to picking. I found this one tough, because there's some obvious choices that I don't know if I could just watch them again and again, but I want to hear from you.
Okay, for me, there was a lot of picks. I mean, I think there's so many episodes of TOS that are amazing that I could watch over and over again. And for me, the issue is that they're all so different.
Yeah.
Unlike, say, you know, a lot of the DS9 episodes or Voyager episodes or whatever, there's like they have a similar feel to them all. Whereas with TOS, I mean, it's like, what do you feel like day to day? You know, they hit every genre, different tones. So ultimately, I wanted an episode that represented the crew at the best, at its best. And I also wanted an episode that really captured the spirit of Star Trek. New worlds, new discoveries, that sense of sort of exploring the unknown.
I don't think we picked the same one.
Okay,
so go ahead.
For that reason, I cut Doomsday Machine, which is maybe the most exciting episode, I think, but it's kind of not really what Star Trek is about.
Sure. And it's also, it's a little darker. It might be...
Well, that's right up my alley,
though. Okay. Well, yeah, sorry, Dylan.
I also cut Carbamite Maneuver,
yeah,
which really came very, very close. The only reason I didn't quite, it didn't quite make it was because I didn't think the crew chemistry was quite as wonderful as my number one pick,
okay,
which was Amok Time.
Oh, okay.
Amok Time, I think is the, probably the greatest, Spock Kirk story in the original series. You get to see a strange new world in Vulcan, which, I mean, there's the most, like, vibrant of all worlds to see in the original series because it has so much impact on the series as a whole and the franchise. It has the great fight sequence. It's got a great music. It's like the colors of it are beautiful. To me, this was just kind of the total package.
Well, when we watched the kind of visual elements from The Ultimate Voyage over the weekends, boy, those colors on Vulcan popped. Like, it's such a visually striking episode. And, like, there's so much going on.
Yeah.
That music, of course, you know, like, it's so iconic. I can't fault you for picking this one and wanting to watch it again and again on your desert island while
That's
listening
right.
to Jimmy Buffett. Because you didn't bring any good records with you. You're stuck with what the last people who are on that desert island are with. You're listening to Jimmy Buffett, man.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, sorry, bro.
Better than that. What's the Hawaiian guy who plays the ukulele?
Oh, and sings about What a Wonderful World.
Yeah. Who's that guy?
Don Ho.
Yeah.
Anyway, so my pick, okay, so I initially thought, hey, what about Mirror Mirror? That's a fun episode. Mm-hmm. But then, you know what, if I was only going to go with one Mirror Universe, I had to go with Enterprise's Outing.
Yeah.
So I put that aside, even though that's such a fun episode of the original series. I thought about City on the Edge of Forever.
Yeah.
That's still kind of a heavy episode. It's kind of tough to watch a woman get run over by a vehicle over and over again.
Right.
Even though it's Joan Collins.
Yeah.
You know,
okay, Harlan Ellison.
You know, I ultimately went with something that this is the episode I've actually seen more than any other episode, and one that I continue to enjoy, and I'd have a hard time finding myself getting sick of it, mm-hmm. which would be very good if I'm on a desert island. I'm going with more of the lighter fare here. I went with The Trouble with Tribbles, Cam.
I thought that's where you were going.
Okay. Yeah. You think I'm just such a simple folk? I like the fuzzy animals.
It just seemed to me like the most, obviously, sort of audience-pleasing episode.
Yeah. Yes. I'm of the masses. It pleases me. But I mean,
clapping like a trained seal.
Hercules. I'm Andre.
Oh
I don't
know.
but I don't know, this is Cam, you can't fault me for picking this one.
It's
such a fun episode. You have so much of the crew is being used in this, and this is what I like, is like when you actually have, you know, a lot of the crew with stuff to do, because we'll get into like other series that I was going through the list and maybe there's not as much for the rest of the crew to do with some of the other picks that I'm going with. But I mean, for this episode, I mean, you've got Scotty and bar fights defending the ship. You know?
That bar fight is what kept it off my pick, was that that long bar fight. I was like, I don't know if I want to watch
the 12-minute bar fight?
Yeah. That's the same reason Shore Leave didn't make it on.
You know, but I mean, hey, this is just such a fun outing for the TOS crew. I could watch this again and again.
It is a great episode. I ultimately decided not to go with a comedic episode for this pick.
Okay.
So shall we move on to TNG then?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, TNG was actually harder because there's so many seasons.
Yeah, I was going through like a lot of like top 10 lists to help me narrow it down. And a lot of them, I'm like, yeah, I get why this makes a top 10 list. But would I be able to watch, say, Chain of Command over and over again? You know?
Yeah, no.
And if I was going to cheat and do another two-parter, I like Best of Both Worlds Part 1. But I don't think Best of Both Worlds Part 2 really carries the weight so much. So it's kind of tougher for those selections. So I had a tough time with TNG as well. Cam, I'm curious, what dilemmas did you face
here? So the episodes that ultimately got cut that didn't quite make it, but were very close to catching the title, were Relics.
Yeah.
Which I just absolutely love. You know, it's a love letter to the original series, which is always good for me.
It's a crowd pleaser.
But it's also, like, I just love the relationship with Scotty and the rest of the crew in this episode, especially Geordi yelling at him. But that scene with Picard sitting with Scotty on the bridge,
yeah.
The old bridge, is just magical. Also on my list was First Contact.
Yeah.
I am a huge fan of this episode.
It's great.
I love watching Picard sort of deal with the diplomatic issues of welcoming a potential new race into the Federation. I really, really love the dialogue. It's a great Picard sequence.
Even just him explaining how First Contact was a disaster with the Klingons.
Yes.
You know, like, I found that fascinating.
Me too. So yeah. That was on my list. The Offspring was the other one that came close.
Yeah, to me, that one I thought about, and again, it just gets, it's a little heavy, even though there are some light moments, you know, like Riker making out with Data's daughter.
Right.
You know, but it is a little bit of a heavier episode. But yeah, again, that's one of its strengths.
Right. So those are the three that I didn't quite pick. Ultimately, I went with one that maybe people wouldn't really go to, which was Parallels.
Okay. You know, actually, I did debate that one as well.
Mm-hmm. This is the episode where Worf's coming back from, like, a Bat'leth tournament and gets caught in a time fissure and winds up back on the Enterprise, but with everything slightly different.
Yeah. I mean, what kept this one off my list is because it's such a Worf-centric episode as opposed to, you know, everybody getting a lot to do. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I mean, this is a fun outing. This is kind of one of the few highlights of season 7.
Great comedy.
Oh, yeah.
All of the stuff with Troy coming to his quarters after they're now married in this, in one of the alternate realities.
But it even inspired a Halloween costume for one Benjamin Yong.
Yes, of Parallels Riker during the Borg War.
But, I mean, the writers are having fun here.
Yeah, Brandon Braga really hit this one out of the park, I feel like. And I feel like this one really does represent TNG, because TNG was a lot of time about, like, sort of these time conundrums and all this, and I feel like this is probably the best and most fun one.
Yeah.
There are other great ones, but this is the one that I really would love to just revisit over and over again.
Some of the ones that I debated, okay, so All Good Things, I already cheated with on two-parter.
Right.
To me, that's a great example of that's TNG at its best right there. Yeah. And that's easy to rewatch. Of course, you've got the Q stuff. Didn't quite make my list because, of course, I can only cheat once with a two-parter. I also debated whether to go with Conundrum. That was the one where they all wake up with no memory.
Yep.
And Riker and Ro get it on.
Right. That's another very fun episode.
That's a very fun episode. And it's the everyone in the crew had something to do because they're trying to figure out who they are, except Data, who's deactivated.
Yeah.
What I ultimately went with is just one of my favorite episodes, and every time I go back and rewatch it, whether we're doing research for the podcast or what have you, I just always appreciate this. To me, is what Star Trek should be about.
Cost of living?
Yeah. Well, how'd you know? No, it's Who Watches the Watchers.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, this is where essentially a Federation research crew, they're discovered, on this planet of this pre-warp society. And it's just about how the Federation totally Fs up and Picard tries to make it better again. And they think of him as a god. He's just like, guys, how can I just make you guys figure out that I'm not a god? It's how do you try to, you know, put the genie back in the bottle, essentially.
Right.
And I love it how the Federation is not infallible here. You know, like, there are some issues, and this is what happens when, you know, something goes wrong on a scientific mission. This is a fun episode. It's certainly more Picard-centric. I was giving you a little bit of crap for picking a very Worf-centric episode.
Right.
But I don't know. Everybody had fun stuff to do, whether, you know, Riker and Troy are wearing some kind of crappy makeup.
Oh, it's crappy.
Yeah. But even Crusher, she makes the executive decision to bring, you know, the proto-Vulcan onto sickbay.
Yeah.
He, just watching him experience this kind of, his version of Valhalla, essentially, you know, it's a fun episode as well.
And you knew that they, the creative team behind it knew they had a hit because they ripped off a lot of it for Insurrection.
Well, exactly, with the duck blind.
Yeah.
I think this was Michael Piller's first writing credit.
Oh, really?
Way to start strong, buddy.
Yeah, that's a pretty auspicious debut.
Yeah. So, yeah, Who Watches Watchers, that was actually one of my hidden gem episodes, because this one doesn't come up a lot on top 10 lists.
Does Parallels?
It might make it on to one. It wouldn't surprise me. But the thing is, I don't think Who Watches Watchers really makes it onto that. And I'm not saying it's my favorite episode of Next Generation of all time, but it's just what one that I can rewatch again, and I can appreciate everything it's trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. So I'm down with that.
Okay, well, next up, I guess, Deep Space Nine.
Did you have trouble with this?
I had a terrible time with Deep Space Nine.
I am happy with my ultimate pick, but I wrestled with so many of these because I think it was the most difficult one I had to make.
Deep Space Nine, what makes it especially difficult is that so much of it is an overarching story.
Yeah.
And so trying to separate a piece from the larger whole is just a fool's errand. Like, I had, and, you know, it's been quite a while since I went through the series now. And I want to do it again. But it was tough because I remember I binged watched it majorly the first time. So I remember moments and scenes and characters in the larger tapestry. Whereas to specify an episode was very difficult.
That's why I brought it up on our Brian Fuller podcast. Like, I don't like binge watching myself because I have time to think about an episode and absorb it week to week.
Right.
It sticks in my brain so much more when I have that experience as opposed to just eating it all up within, you know, like a 2 week period.
Right. So ultimately, the three that didn't quite make my list were The Visitor.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing episode. I mean, if I'm going to like tear up in a Star Trek episode, that's going to be the one I'm going to watch.
You already went with your emotional pick with Twilight. So.
Exactly. Yeah. And ultimately, it's such a Jake and Sisko episode. Yeah. You know, the crew is kind of not really in it very much.
And I agree, except we get to see Captain Nog.
Right.
But I do like how Deep Space Nine is able to really tackle that father-son relationship that we don't really see any good child's parent relationships in the rest of Star Trek.
What about Naomi Wildman?
And her absentee mother?
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so next up I had In the Pale Moonlight.
Okay, those are the two that I struggled with before ultimately going to something else as well.
Okay, so In the Pale Moonlight, again, it's a fantastic episode, but it's also tied to the whole Dominion War. And if I got no Dominion War episodes, it's kind of like this.
I think this one can stand out on its own, but if I'm on a desert island, it's pretty dark.
Look, again, I got nothing but dark movies on my list. I know, I know. So.
But it's why I didn't make it onto my list as well. But, I mean, these are the two episodes we just named. It would probably make it onto our top 10 lists, no problem.
Easy.
Maybe top five.
Call to Arms was the other one that didn't quite make my list.
Okay.
Because it has the greatest ending of any DS9 episode ever. Maybe any Trek episode ever. Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah.
That's, of course, where they all get booted off DS9 and Sisko leaves behind his baseball.
Well, okay, you know, why don't we just get to it? That was actually my pick.
Was that your pick?
Yeah, so why don't I delve into it and then you can reveal yours.
Yeah, okay.
This is why it was my pick, because I was looking for episodes where Deep Space Nine was firing on all cylinders.
Right.
And we're talking about DS9 on all cylinders. You're talking about kind of the main cast having something to do, the supporting characters having something to do, the political stuff going on, the war-related stuff going on. Just even the sci-fi stuff, you've got self-replicating minds. You know, you've got so much going on. Just think about all the character stuff. Rom and Leeta get married.
Yeah.
Worf and Jadzia, they plan to get married.
Right.
Garak says, hey, I've got nowhere else to go. Can I hitch my wagon to the Defiant for now?
Right.
You've got, of course, that amazing ending with Weyoun and Dukat inspecting the baseball. Damar's shit-eating grin when he arrives on the promenade and he's just looking at it. It's so much amazing stuff. You've got Kira and Odo debating their relationship about what it means. Like, there's so much great character stuff interspersed with amazing story stuff.
And you get that ending of Sisko on the Defiant meeting up with the fleet.
Well, let me ask you this, though, because I remember when it first aired, all the fans just assumed, oh, we're on our way back to Deep Space Nine to retake
the station. That's what I thought when I first saw it.
Okay. It was still incredibly badass.
Oh, it was the greatest moment.
We've never seen anything like that in Star Trek before.
No,
it was just like, holy crap. So, yeah, that blew me out of the water. This is why, to me, it's so hard to just find one episode of Deep Space Nine that really kind of, I can rewatch again and again and appreciate it. This really, you know, just hits out of the ballpark here for me. And I don't know if this would actually make say my top five list the way that In the Pale Moonlight or The Visitor would, mm-hmm. but it has so much rewatchability to it, and this is the show firing on all cylinders, in my opinion, here.
Right.
So there you go. That's my pick for Deep Space Nine. Cam, what's your number one pick?
Ultimately, I went with Trials and Tribulations.
See, I already went with Trouble the Trouble with Tribbles. So
you gotta have some Tribbles in your Desert Island pick.
I did think about it, because think about this. So I could, if I went with like certain alternatives, I would have had Inamir Darkly.
Yes.
You know, some TOS uniforms there. I would have had Trouble with Tribbles. You know, of course, you know, TOS uniforms there. I would have had Trials and Tribulations. Of course, it would have been all revolving around like these TOS uniforms and going back, you know.
Yeah.
So, spoiler alert, I did not go with Flashback from Voyager as my Desert Island pick, but it would have been a flashback to the old film era uniforms as well. Yeah. So, anyways, sorry.
Yeah, so I mean, for me, first off, again, like all the TOS stuff, I absolutely adore. But also, this episode is a technical marvel.
Oh, yeah.
Just to watch.
It blew their budget for like half the season.
And it also has a lot of the cast featured quite prominently doing fun things.
Oh, just like Jadzia and Bashir. I just even love how Sisko, super serious Sisko, could not resist getting Kirk's autograph.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing, you know? What was that scene from? I think, was that from Mirror Mirror?
It's from the end of Mirror Mirror.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Okay.
So, like, while this isn't your typical Deep Space Nine episode, and actually...
It is more of, as I said before, a bit of an anomaly, but I did pick an anomaly with In a Mirror Darkly, so I'll give you this one,
Cam. I went lighter with this one.
Okay.
of the darkest series.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I would have thought I would have gone more with a Kira-centric episode, because those tend to be my favorite.
Yeah.
But a lot of them just are a little too grim for something I want to take to a desert island to watch over and over again.
Sure.
Whereas, to me, Trials and Tribulations is just a blast from beginning to end. The cast is on fire. Everyone in this episode is just on fire. You know, the creative team, everyone.
Well, let me ask you this. You brought up, you know, Deep Space Nine is the grimmest of the series.
I think so, yeah.
I don't think anyone will argue that point. Do you think, out of all the modern Trek, it probably did the lighter episodes more consistently than anything else? Any other franchise?
Consistently as in quality-wise?
Quality-wise.
Yeah.
I agree.
I think they have far better light episodes than, say, Voyager.
Yeah.
When you get like Spirit Folk and Fairhaven and Concerning Flight.
Wait, I'm a Leonardo da Vinci.
Oh my lord. I watched this one the other night or a few nights ago and I was like, this is one of the worst hours of television I've ever watched. Where they're like riding the flying like machine at the end. Oh my god. And like the bad guy gets bopped on the back of the head like 3 times.
Yeah.
Oh, it's awful.
You weren't a fan of Gimli as Leonardo da Vinci?
He's fine. He's having fun, but it's a terrible
episode. It's terrible. I agree.
So, yeah, no, I agree. Like, DS9 definitely hits all of those. Because, I mean, you could swap this out for, like, Take Me Out to the Holodeck. Yeah. And that's just as much fun.
Or, like, Magnificent Ferengi.
Yeah.
Or Little Green Men.
Not a few of the other Ferengi episodes.
not Prophet and Lace.
No.
Okay. But, I mean, there's so many, like I think Deep Space Nine's lighter fare is so much better than, you know, what you get from Next Generation or Voyager
I
Enterprise.
Agree. Fascination?
Oh, dear. Wow. A lot of good Beryl moments in there.
There are a lot of good Beryl moments. Okay, so I'm just curious, what were your runners-up?
Oh, well, you mentioned already Visitor and In the Pale Moonlight. Those were my two ones that I did debate, as well as, Trials and Tribulations. So you actually hit upon, like, all the ones that I was thinking about. I already went with a bit of a lighter episode as well, so that's why I didn't go with, say, Little Green Men or Magnificent Ferengi. I think, you know, Call to Arms was better just because more of the crew had stuff to do than, say, like a Quark-centric episode. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even though those are a lot of fun. Very rewatchable, in my opinion.
Oh, I agree.
So
now, this is going to be the curious one. I feel we will not line up on this one at all.
And after Deep Space Nine, this is the one that I struggled with the most.
Yeah.
Not because there's an abundance of picks, but, like, I just, like, to me, here's the thing. Voyager has some good episodes, but when it comes to rewatchability... Mm-hmm. That's a tougher sell for me. It just like what one would I want to watch again and again and again? And there's really one I ultimately ended up going with my first pick, the one that first came to mind, because I thought about other ones, but I don't know. Cam, why don't you hit on your dilemmas here?
So here were my runners up for Voyager: Course Oblivion.
Yeah.
Which is a great episode with an alternate crew rushing back to to the demon planet.
Sure.
And then evaporating into nothing. It's really grim, which is fine. But ultimately, I decided not to pick it because it is an alternate crew. I wanted the real crew.
Yeah, fair enough.
So that was what kept that one off. Life Signs.
Okay, yeah, that's
another pick that I really enjoyed. And then the other one was Twisted.
Really?
I really like Twisted a lot. Okay. I love the premise where the ship just keeps getting reorganized.
Okay.
Okay, well, fine, you know.
I know, I'm not trying to mock you. I just, like, for me, like, if I'm on a desert island, there's only one Voyager episode I can bring with me.
Well, it was a runner-up.
It's not Twisted.
Okay, well, ultimately, I went with Prey.
Oh, the Herogen.
Yes, with the Herogen episode, with Tony Todd playing an injured Herogen that Voyager takes in, who's then hunting a species 8472 on the ship.
You must just watched this one, right?
A little while ago, yeah.
Within, like, the last month.
Yeah, yeah. For sure, yeah.
Okay.
People often talk about Macrocosm as the greatest, Aliens episode. No, Prey is pure Alien, with, like, Species 8472, like, climbing on the outside of Voyager.
That was pretty badass, yeah.
It's great, and I love that this is, like, an action sort of horror-heavy episode, but it has great Seven of Nine stuff, with her basically disagreeing with Janeway's orders over the 8472.
She took it very personally.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, and ultimately makes the call on her own.
Yeah.
And I really got a lot out of this episode. I think it's a fantastic Voyager episode. And that's something I don't generally say. Like, for me, so far, where I am at the end of season 4, or I finished season 4, there's not many Voyager episodes I would call, like, all-timer Trek episodes.
Okay.
I think it hits good to really good fairly consistent amount.
Yeah.
But there's very few episodes that sort of rank up with episodes like Parallels or A Mock Time or whatever you want. You know, the great Trek episodes.
The Visitor or In the Pale Moonlight.
Yeah. Whereas, like, for me, Prey is probably my favorite of the bunch so far.
Okay. Interesting. That's not something I would have suspected, but I'm not going to make fun of you like I did with Twisted. For me, so there were a couple things that I could go with, and I'll let you know what my gut instinct told me what I ultimately went with. You're not going to like it. I know that for sure.
Okay.
But,
is it Concerning Flight?
There's actually, like, Da Vinci reappears,
oh,
Cam.
No.
I hate to burst your bubble here, but he's coming back.
Okay.
Not due to fan, demand.
I've seen a few with him.
Okay.
He has shown up a few times now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I thought about Message in a Bottle. That's the one featuring the Doctor and the EMH Mark II, played by Andy Dick.
That's a fun episode.
That's a fun episode, but it's very... the rest of the crew doesn't have that much to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I also thought about Blink of an Eye. That's where Voyager comes across, like, this alien planet that moves in time at a much faster rate than it does.
Mm-hmm.
So it's able to observe the society develop and change. It's really what sci-fi should be. It's a great example of Star Trek right there. I don't know if I could watch it again and again on a desert island, though.
Mm-hmm.
Tuvix, I'm a bigger fan of it than you are, but again...
It's a good episode.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about the rewatchability factor. although I'm a fan of Tom Wright's performance, you know. It's got rewatchability factor. There's also Timeless. I don't think you've gotten there yet.
Almost.
That's one of my favorite episodes of Voyager, and to think that it's a Chakotay, Harry Kim-centric episode, pretty impressive feat
Is Da Vinci in it?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
No, I'm joking.
Oh, okay.
But so that was the one that I struggled with most, whether it was going to be this one or the one I ultimately picked. But when we came up with this idea, Cam, my gut told me to go with Tinker Tenor, Dr. Spy.
This doesn't surprise me.
Okay.
You brought this episode up a few times.
I have, because honestly, this is one of the few, you know, lighter episodes of Star Trek where I was laughing out loud.
It's a very funny episode.
You know, just Tom Paris's weak wave at B'Elanna.
So good. That was, I definitely laughed out loud at that moment.
There's so many good character moments, even though it's just the Doctor being delusional.
Right.
Like, every single member of the crew has something to do, and it's comedic.
Yeah.
I love the Doctor. I think he's one of the best characters on this series. And just to see him really make an ass out of himself, you know, just his ego. Because here's the thing, this is a guy had a whole lot of hubris, and so it's pretty amazing to really find him just humiliated, you know.
Well, it's kind of like the British comedy, sort of the stiff upper lip, where it's always kind of losing all dignity. I mean, that's sort of applied to the Doctor, and I think it's done really well in that episode.
And we get to ultimately see the emergency command hologram.
Yeah.
You know, that was fun. I think Brian Fuller may have penned this one,
Possibly.
Let me double check on that. But yeah. This is just such a fun episode. I can absolutely watch this again and again. No questions asked.
It is a very fun episode.
Yeah.
Didn't quite make my pick, but I think it's interesting that both our Voyager picks were so different. Why do you think it is? Because we line up on DS9 pretty bang on. Enterprise was pretty close. Why do you think Voyager, it's like a completely different list of episodes?
I'm not trying to, you know, bug any of our Voyager fans that are listeners here, but I just think Voyager's the least consistent of all the Star Trek series. And so when you have such a wide spectrum of different shows, I was actually going through top 10 lists. Mm-hmm. I didn't really find that many top 10 lists that lined up.
I wildly disagreed with every top 10 list I looked at.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's a couple that both included Scorpion and, you know, Year of Hell, but other than that, I found wildly different lists all over the place. I don't think any fans really have some sort of consensus when it comes to Voyager. I think people like it for different reasons.
And I've liked episodes that are not well-regarded. Like, I really like Prototype.
Twisted,
yeah. But I really like Prototype.
Yeah, I like that one as well. But like, among fans, it wasn't really...
No.
It's kind of given a shrug of a
pretty
shoulder.
Pretty low score on IMDb.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was very curious to me. Like, when I watched Prey, I was baffled as to why that was not an episode I'd heard mentioned much.
I mean, to me, I didn't know what your list was before you read it off, but I do recognize that one. But to me, it wasn't one that I would necessarily have on my top 10 list. I remember it being a solid outing, you know. But yeah, it's tough. Like, I don't know what it is about Voyager that makes it so odd when it comes to picking favorite episodes among all the fans.
Right.
So
now, we didn't discuss this in advance, but I think we should also just include our Desert Island pick for movie. Maybe that's obvious.
Sure.
Anyone who listened to Ranking the Movies might figure this out. But
yeah,
for me, I got to go with Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
I think this is sort of the total package when it comes to the original crew on the big screen. The motion picture would actually be interesting to take because I think you could do a lot of analysis of that movie. But I think Wrath of Khan is the most entertaining.
Sure.
It's the one where you get all the great Kirk moments. It just has the emotional highs, the action. It's just, I think, the kind of the perfect Star Trek movie,
now,
at least in my opinion.
Intellectually, I can totally appreciate that this is a superior film than the one that I would ultimately take with me to this desert island.
Yeah.
But we're talking about, like, the films that I've watched more than any other one and that I just haven't gotten sick of yet.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly so, is Star Trek First Contact.
Right.
I can't imagine myself getting sick of this one. And I actually watched it twice in probably the last, like, year and a half.
Right.
I didn't get sick of it, like, either viewings. Even though, like, we were quite critical of it during our podcast episode.
I especially was, but yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. I dug it, though, and I still dig it. I would have no issues bringing it with me to a desert island. Even though it's flawed, I can understand it's not quite up there with Wrath of Khan, but I like this, and for whatever reason, it's like my move along home.
Right.
No matter what anyone else thinks, I still like it.
Right. And then I had another question for you.
Okay.
What series would you take if you could only take one Trek series?
There would be no question there. It'd have to be Deep Space Nine. What about you, though?
Deep Space Nine is, to me, the logical choice because, first off, you're getting the most bang for your buck. You're getting 7 seasons, right?
Exactly.
Like, a lot of content.
And you're not getting seasons 1 and 2 of, say, Next Generation.
Right.
So,
yeah. Or the sort of inconsistency of Voyager.
Yeah.
I think I would still ultimately go original series.
Okay.
And I think that has less to do with the quantity and more to do with just the fact that the original series, every episode has such a different feel and tone that it would be more of a kind of potpourri of Star Trek adventures versus DS9, which is kind of just a very similar tone throughout.
I agree.
There are light episodes,
yeah,
but it does feel kind of one long story.
It's not like, oh, this episode's a Western and
this
is our... Well, I was going to say this is our caper, but they did have capers, especially very on the nose with Bada Bing, Bada Bang.
For sure, for sure.
But
it's something about post-original series when you get into TNG onwards. There's a genuine template to the show, like its visual template and everything, where it feels similar to me.
Okay.
Each episode feels kind of similar.
I agree.
Whereas original series kind of swings for the fences every time out, it seems, and it does something really bizarre or different. And you kind of get, you have the entire emotional spectrum of what you're looking for and original series.
Okay. What would be your number 2 Desert Island pick, though?
Oh, that's easy. DS9.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
See, that's... I guess I would ultimately have to go with Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just... There's so many classic episodes in there, so...
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what?
Not the animated series?
Well, you know, I can't believe I debated whether to do the counterclock incidents right. as, you know, my number one pick for TOS, but alas, it's officially animated, so.
Yeah, well, my bonus pick for anyone who wants to keep score, I would say Yesteryear is my Desert Island animated series.
Well, there you go. Well, Cam...
There was no runners-up.
just finally, we had a great listener question mailed to us last week.
Mm-hmm.
It was discussing... This is from one Michael Fairchild, a regular listener of ours. He was just asking us to comment on kind of the scientific irregularities that seems to be in abundance on Star Trek.
Right.
Despite the fact that they do employ, like, scientific advisors.
Mm-hmm.
So... to me, one of the things that I noted is kind of the wormholes, the way that they're depicted on this series.
Right.
They're kind of these flat holes in space, which in reality, or I guess in theory, I should say, they would be more kind of these spherical objects, you know. So I learned that from Interstellar.
Right.
The other thing is the depiction of dark matter. We still don't quite know what dark matter is, but it was a big plot point in Voyager.
Yeah.
So Cam's like, yeah, as if he knows what I'm talking about.
I have no idea.
Yeah. So
I'm trying to sound smart.
Yeah. So dark matter is a little bit up there. Again, listeners, this is two dudes with arts degrees. We're trying our best here. But Cam, why don't you detail a little bit about your own research here?
Okay, so you pretty much used up my research.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had a thing about black holes.
Oh, okay.
In the Voyager episode Parallax. That was one that I'm too much of an idiot to pick out these things myself. So I kind of looked up on the online the ones that really drew the most ire from science sort of minded fans. And Parallax was a big one where Voyager gets stuck in a black hole, which is centered in around a quantum singularity.
And aren't those one and the same?
I don't know.
Okay.
And the points raised were, it said, treating black holes as two regions of flat space-time separated by an impenetrable event horizon. In the episode, Voyager has no trouble climbing up through the black hole at warp speed, but they can't pass the event horizon itself. In reality, of course, a black hole could be said to have infinitely many event horizons, each horizonier than the one that precedes it. The outermost one is the easiest one to pass through.
Of course. Sorry, where did you find this?
I found this online.
Yeah, but where?
I don't remember. Some site that had like sort of grievances with Star Trek science.
Letters to Hustler?
And then the second point was it said, treating said barrier as something you can simply shoot a hole through is incorrect. Now, I could possibly see a hole as an analogy for an artificially generated space-time subspace anomaly that would make a dent in the event horizon, or a wormhole through or around it.
I think we've lost all our listeners at this point. Here's the thing. But, you're done.
I have one more
Okay, well,
point.
Just let me say one thing about black holes, though.
Yes.
The way that they're depicted in, say, the J.J. Abrams reboot from 2009.
Yes.
Nero goes through a black hole, and it somehow takes him through time.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I don't think that's how black holes work.
No. So, yeah, the black hole thing is definitely questionable.
Yeah.
The other episode, actually, no, this is my own thoughts, was Threshold. Yeah, you have to talk about Threshold.
Yeah, with the way that people evolve.
Is it evolve or devolve?
No, that's evolution.
Yeah, evolve into, like, salamanders.
I've said it before, but it really pisses me off because it's not like evolution has, like, this predetermined genetic code that just needs to be unlocked.
Yeah.
It has to do with so many factors about, like, mutations, your living conditions, just how you adapt to your surroundings.
Yeah.
It makes no sense that you go through, you know, at warp 10 and you turn into a salamander.
Right. No, it makes absolutely no sense. So that to me is that, I mean, even like a scientific idiot like me can watch that episode and kind of scratch their head as to what the hell the writers are trying to convince me of.
Yeah.
So I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. I would love to know what some of your desert island picks would be. Would Concerning Flight land on any of your top picks for Voyager episodes?
And Cam, don't forget, coming up next week, we're going to delve into the Mirror Universe as well. A very fun episode. I think we'll tackle whether Star Trek should return to the Mirror Universe.
I wonder what it'll be like to sit down and watch all those episodes again.
Well, we'll just have to wait 1 week to find out, Cameron.
I think so.
That's, of course, the new Star Trek Beyond trailer doesn't drop in the meantime. Then I think we'll do kind of an emergency episode once again and just give our reaction to what I hope is a much more successful trailer.
You can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Visitor, not on my Desert Island Picks. Smith.
Find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in Knuckle Sandwich at a Star Trek concert. And yes, I know I spelled knuckle incorrectly.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.